Well, everybody, welcome to episode 339 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it is brought to our good friends at Legacy Realty of Iowa and Revive Dermatology Clinic and Spa. At Legacy Realty, we combine the best of both worlds, the local expertise of over 75 agents in the Ankeny Metro, with the innovative power of LPT Realty, one of the fastest-growing nationwide brokerages. Our agents have the flexibility to tailor their services to meet your needs, and they are equipped with advanced marketing strategies to help you achieve your goals. Looking to buy or sell? Our local agents know the Ankeny market inside and out, and they're here to guide you through every step of the process. Whether you're moving across town or across the country, we have the resources to help you succeed. Legacy Realty of Iowa, local expertise, national strength, your real estate advantage. All right. Well, happy St. Patty's Day, everybody. I have a special guest lined up today with March Madness getting underway tonight with the first four games in Dayton. I thought it'd be fun to catch up with this former Ankeny basketball star to talk about his experiences of going to the NCAA tournament when he played for Northern Iowa. He was a four-year varsity player at Ankeny under Coach John Peterson, and he helped the Hawks to back-to-back third-place finishes in Class 4A in 2011 and 2012. He was a second-team All-State pick as a junior and a first-team selection as a senior. At Northern Iowa, he was on Panther teams that reached the second round of the NCAA tournament in 2015 and 2016. And in 2020, he was named to the third team of Ankeny Fanatics' all-time Ankeny boys basketball team. He is Ted Friedman. Ted, thanks for joining me. How you doing?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me, Dan. Appreciate it.
Hey, you bet. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on today. We'll talk about this year's NCAA tournament and your experiences of March Madness here in a few minutes. But first, I wanted to ask you about some of your memories of playing at Ankeny, because you certainly played on two of the best teams in school history during your career. You scored a total of 913 points in your high school career while helping the Hawks to a combined record of 79-20. You closed out your career by scoring a career-high 22 points and a loss to Dowling in a sub-state final your senior year. But I mainly wanted to ask you about the previous two seasons, you know, that ended with those third-place finishes at State. In your sophomore year, you guys reached the semifinals before losing to Des Moines Hoover on a last-second jumper by Kelly Madison Jr. Mm-hmm. Now, I know I wrote a story that in that story that it was an off-balance jumper, but I honestly can't remember too much about that play other than that I think it was from around the free throw line area. So do you remember much about the final few seconds of that game?
I don't remember too much about that game, to be honest. I mean, Kelly, you know, we played in the same AAU program, so I knew him well, and we knew that team really well. I knew it was going to be a tough game. And then I think, you know, big back and forth game all the time, and knew it came down to, it was going to come down to something that was going to be, you know, last second. I think that game went into double overtime as well, if I believe. So I think we were pretty, it was a lot of back and forth, and I mean, just devastated. You know, we were right there. It felt like we were a season that was, continuing to progress. And I mean, especially with Grant Lang's last season, and I thought we were, you know, we were going, we really thought we had a good chance of getting to the finals there for sure. And so, I mean, I remember, you know, devastation for sure, but don't remember too much about that shot specifically.
Yeah, it's funny how many games there are over the years, because I certainly remember the next year's tournament when you had that tough loss to Sioux City East. But yeah, until I looked it up last night, you know, I'd forgotten all about that game against Hoover. Mm-hmm. But you guys did rebound to beat Iowa City West in overtime in the third place game the next day.
Yep.
And that's obviously not an easy game to get up for. But it turned out to be a great game. And then the following year, of course, both your team and West went undefeated all the way through the quarterfinals of the state tournament. You know, and it looked like we could have a matchup of teams with perfect records in the final. But unfortunately, that matchup never materialized, because you guys did lose to the Adam Woodbury-led Sioux City East team in double overtime in the semifinals. And that was a game that you guys led going into the fourth quarter. And, of course, you know, it was played prior to the shot clock era. And because East sat back in the zone, you guys did hold the ball for much of that final period, you know, try to get them to come out of their zone. But they, you know, they allowed a lot of time to go off the clock before they were forced to do so. And eventually East was able to tie it up and send the game to overtime. And they were able to eventually prevail despite Woodbury fouling out in the second overtime. You know, I'm sure you have a lot of memories, you know, of that game. Do you think about it very often?
Yeah, every once in a while. I mean, this is definitely the game that sticks in my mind most. I mean, you know, obviously the Hoover game was big, and we lost Grant Lang that year, but, you know, we were returning four of our five starters, and, you know, we really felt like we had a great year being able to come. You know, we thought we had put the whole package together. A lot of us had been playing since on the, you know, varsity team since we were freshmen, and really thought this was the year that we could put it all together. We got, you know, third the previous year. It's like, well, we're going to put it all together this year, and just ended up, yeah, coming into Sioux City East, and things just didn't go our way. I do think about that, you know, that game a lot, and just how things ended up unfolding. I think what happened is that Woodbury got into some foul trouble, so they ended up sitting him, and then so they went back into a zone, and we're like, well, we're a team that likes to run a gun. We'll expand them out, make them come after us, and not just sit in that zone. And then it just kind of unfolded from there, where they just like, no, we're going to sit back, and we kind of sat back too. And I think it just more kind of naturally transpired into kind of a waiting and seeing kind of game. I don't think it was, you know, necessarily the intention initially of how we wanted to play, but I think that's just how it came down to at that point. And I think there was just and then it came back and forth. And I know, just some shots didn't go our way. I think down the stretch, we just didn't make shots that we usually made in that game. And so then, obviously, led to the double overtime and, devastating loss for sure.
Well, I know some people question the strategy to hold the ball, but if you've got the lead and the ball and your opponent, is willing to allow you to milk the clock, and shorten the game, I certainly understand the logic behind it. Do you ever wonder how that game might have turned out if there had been a shot clock?
Yeah, I've always been pro shot clock even back then. I think that it's always interesting to kind of go down that vein, that train of thought, just to see what would have happened and if we would have kept pushing it or tried to press them a little bit harder and how that would have gone. And it's a thought experiment I've done, but it's not useful at this point in time. I mean, it was kind of coulda, shoulda, woulda kind of thing.
Sure. Well, Woodbury, of course, went on to play for Iowa, where he had a couple of well-known incidents where he poked his opponent in the eye. What do you remember about playing against him, and did you ever have any incidents with him?
Nothing to that extent, but we sure were not friends during any of our games, for sure. What I remember too during that game is I tried to take three charges on him that got called for three blocking fouls, which I will contend that one of them for sure was a blocking foul, but the other two were for sure charges.
Yeah.
And so I thought he was getting some calls that went his way that didn't really help us out as much as well, which I he was a very physical player. I mean, very good player. Obviously going to Iowa and everything, but very physical. And I think, used all of his 7-1 and kind of had to get into him too. So I'm, probably poked the bear a little bit too, was trying to make sure that he can't get to his spots as well.
Well, yeah, that Ankeny team, you talked about having four of the five starters back from the previous year. That team was so balanced. I think you had five guys averaging right around 10 points a game. I mean, just that balance and the fact that everybody could score, when you were open, it just made you guys so hard to guard, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's what I loved about that team, is that most of us have been playing together since like second grade. I played with Corey Cole, Connor Chable, all the time during, our younger years, and then growing up through AAU. So we were so well attuned to each other. And I think it was one of those things that we just knew where everyone was going to be, how it was going to go. They could feed into me post and I could score if I knew they were going to cut right. I mean, we just knew where everybody was at all points in time. And no one felt like they needed to score more than one. Like, as soon as someone would have a good game, we'd give to that person. And I think it made us really, really hard to guard in all facets, because you couldn't really pick a player to shut down. As soon as you picked one player, then somebody else was wide open. So really, really helpful there.
Well, your team again rebounded from the loss to earn third place finish. You guys defeated the defending champs from Linbar that were led by future North Carolina standout Marcus Page. I talked to Marcus after that game and asked him, his thoughts about what would have happened if you guys had played Iowa City West for the title, because, the Trojans pretty much dominated Sioux City East to win the championship. Marcus told me he thought it would have been a great game, and if you guys, had played Sioux City East 10 times, he thinks you guys would have won the majority of the times. And I'm sure you would have loved to have a shot at Iowa City West, which then went on to have another undefeated season the following year, and eventually won three titles in a row while going 75-3 during that stretch. How do you think you guys would have matched up with that Iowa City West team?
Yeah, I think really well. That's what we were planning for the whole year. It's exactly, we were really excited to do it. I know, obviously on that team was Jeremy Morgan and Wyatt Lowhouse, who I played with at UNI, and talking to those guys, the next couple of years, that they were just as excited to play us as well. I think it was like we were both, that's the game we all wanted to see who was going to be there. And I think, Corey and Cole were great defenders, and would have hopefully gave Jeremy and Wyatt some trouble. And I think that it would have been, they had some good bigs too, so I think it would have been a great back and forth game that it would have been fantastic to see. So obviously we would like to say that we would have won that game, but I think Jeremy and Wyatt say the other way as well.
Sure. Oh yeah. All right. Listen to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Legacy Realty of Iowa and Revive Dermatology Clinic and Spa. Revive opened in 2017, is located on the south side of Ankeny near Hy-Vee. They provide top-tier aesthetic procedures as well as dermatology. You can usually get a dermatology appointment the same day. Revive offers Botox, fillers, lasers, medical-grade skincare, weight loss injections, and cool sculpting. Revive loves Ankeny and is very supportive of this community. You can give them a call at 515-965-5677. Well, we're visiting with former Ankeny and Northern Iowa player Ted Friedman today about his experiences of playing in the NCAA tournament. And, let's talk about your career at Northern Iowa now. trying to remember how early it was during your high school career that it was you committed to the Panthers. So was it during your junior or senior year?
Yeah, I was going into, I actually committed on my birthday, which was July 6th, on going into my senior year. Oh, okay. So right before, like the last AAU circuit was when I committed to Northern Iowa.
Now, who were the other schools that you considered and what led you to UNI?
Yeah, I had 8 offers at the time in total. I think the closest ones that were I was considering was Creighton, St. Louis, and Lehigh were kind of the top there. I think what really drew me to UNI is just the fact of how much they they wanted me, and I think how much they so much time and energy they spent into my recruitment. I know specifically one game in the AAU circuit that we didn't play that well, and Coach Jacobson, was the only college coach in the whole crowd in this like random gym in Arkansas that he came to see just me. And it just like showed the sport and how much faith they had in me. And I think that was a big, and, staying somewhat close to home was great. And I think and from the basketball side of staying things, I think, UNI's prominence on the defensive end was kind of where I prided myself always, as I was always a really great defensive player and always prided myself there. And I think that was exactly how UNI fit as well. As you can see, in this tournament, I mean, they're one of the best defensive teams in the nation with how many points they hold teams to, and have always continued to do that throughout their whole team, whole career. And so I think that's where I see the fit really well, is that I knew that defensive philosophy and I had that same mindset. And so we matched up really well on that point, and that standpoint too.
All right. Well, you went on to play in 21 games as a freshman, and you started 3 times for a team that finished 16 and 15 overall. Now, did you find that transition to the college level pretty smooth, or was there a few rough spots?
Yeah, my career was very kind of interesting one. So I ended up actually starting my very first college collegiate game. The speed is always what really gets you, that people don't truly understand till you get there, just how quickly everything happens. You can get, there's an ability, like every single thing happens just a touch faster. And so I think that was a little bit of an adjustment period for me, trying to figure out how that all occurred. I think on the defensive side, like I said, I was priding myself there, and I was fine transition wise to be able to guard those players that were there. But I think on the offensive side, it took me a little bit to kind of get into my own and understand the flow there.
We then redshirted in your second season, and I'm trying to remember, was that an injury-related decision, or did you and the coaches just feel like you could use another year for development?
Yeah, so like I said, kind of my interesting career path was that, so I started my very first ever game. They wanted to move. I was recruited as a 4, but then I started to play as a 5 initially. And then they moved Seth Tuttle to the 4 those first couple games in my freshman year. And then I think they realized that, I need a little bit more development. Seth Tuttle was more of a 5, true 5. And so they kind of moved him back to the 5 position. And then I kind of took a little bit of a back seat. And so I think with him being in the forefront there, and us having some other pieces around, and, Nate Buss kind of took that 4 piece, that 4 position. And so that we really had a good team that was surrounding Tuttle and everybody else, that it was more of a developmental piece for me to, take the back seat there so that we could get, Seth Tuttle and Nate Buss kind of out of there, and I could do a development year and still have 3 more years on the back end to play. So
gotcha. Well, that UNI team went 31-4, and they won the Missouri Valley Conference tournament to earn an NCAA bid. You guys were sent to Seattle for the West Regional. You defeated Wyoming in the first round before losing to 17th ranked Louisville. Now, were you able to make that trip even though you were redshirting?
Yes, I did. Yep, I made that trip. It was an incredible experience. I mean, It's surreal. I was trying to think about the words of how to describe it. I mean, it's just surreal being there and being on the court. I mean, you always see, you have the court just I've imaged in my mind of just how much I like, as a kid, like I want to be on that court, with the NCAA logo and everything there. And so I think just walking onto that court, even though I didn't play that year, and just being into the, being one of the team members and being part of the experience of everything that was going on was just surreal, and being like, oh, wow, I've made it. Like, this is my whole dream was to get here, and I've been able to walk on this court, and I've been not playing that year, but then obviously the next year I've been able to play. But being there was just an incredibly surreal experience. Like, wow, it's crazy that these, these dreams I've had since second grade have come to fruition.
Well, maybe the fact that you weren't playing that year gave you a chance to maybe soak up the atmosphere a little more and enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the following year, you guys went 23-13 and again won the Missouri Valley Tournament to make the big dance. And you did it in dramatic fashion when Wes Washburn hit a last second jumper that bounced high off the rim and then went in to beat Evansville. And it's hard to top a shot like that. But then in the opening round of the NCAA tournament, Oklahoma City. You guys certainly did that when Paul Jesperson banked in a half-court shot at the buzzer to beat Texas. You know, that's one of the most iconic shots in the NCAA tournament history. Yep. And you still see it played just about every year during March Madness. You know, that just has to bring a smile to your face every time you see it, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. And that whole year is kind of a – That whole year was a journey. I think we started out really well, played great in non-conference year. That was the year we beat North Carolina at home, which is actually the game I played the most in my entire career was North Carolina at home, which was kind of a crazy experience. But started out really well, and then I think we had a slump during, you know, the middle of the season. We kind of had to ride a high of coming back at the end and made a run in the Missouri Valley tournament, you know, capped by Wes's amazing shot that, you know, banked off the back of the rim and went all straight in the air and went down. And then we just kept the momentum going into the NCAA tournament. And I mean, I think we knew Neo and I always has a great shot since we play such great defense that we know we're going to be in almost every game, no matter who the team is. And I think that's what really helped us there. And we had a lot of confidence and we knew we had a lot of shooters and everything. And so we had full confidence we could win that game. And, I think just came down to it. And I think, you know, Coach Jake let us play at the end and we got the ball out of bounds and threw it to Paul. And obviously, yeah, incredible shot. I mean, yeah, it absolutely brings a smile to my face every time I see it in the tournament and trying to, see us all running, piling on Paul and all that stuff too. It's a crazy, great memory.
Well, I'm sure you had as good a view of that shot as anybody. I mean, could you tell when he shot it that, hey, that's got a shot to go in?
You always think, you're always hoping for sure. I think just it happened so quick and, you know, they made their shot. We got it up going. He threw it up and I was like, oh no, that's got a shot. And one of my funny memories I tell people now that hey, there's a game winning shot. You got to sprint towards the person who just made the shot and not jump up in the air. Cause what I did is I jumped up first, in excitement. And so I was the last guy to the pile. And so you can't see me as much, but, when everybody else kind of just sprinted towards him, that's kind of a funny, memory of it.
Well, there can't be a better way to win a game like that, but then you guys have to stop and refocus for the game 2 days later. I mean, did Coach Jake let you guys enjoy that for a while, or did he try to get you to come down right away?
I think that night, he told us specifically that night, hey, enjoy this, is what it is. And I think he, had a lot of great takeaways from when, you know, they beat Kansas, you know, back in, you know, 2009-2010 of how to, you know, prep and, you know, experience these wins and everything. And so, he had a good perspective there of, enjoy this win as much as tonight. And then in the morning, we'll shift our focus back to, the team at hand with, Texas A&M at that point. But yeah, we were able to, enjoy that night. And, just all the texts and everything from everybody watching, Sports Center and all that stuff. So we, definitely were able to focus on there and then, get a good night's sleep and then, refocus at that point.
Well, you guys got to experience both the highest of highs and the lowest of lows in that tournament. Of course, 2 days later, you guys had third-seeded Texas A&M on the ropes as you built a 12-point lead with under a minute to play. And it certainly appeared that you guys were headed to the Sweet 16. But I know your team's primary inbounds passer, Matt Bohannon, was on the bench with an injury, and the Aggies were able to capitalize on some late turnovers and to tie the game. They eventually won it in double overtime. And I can't even imagine what Coach Jacobson, would have said to you guys in the locker room after a loss like that. Did you have any recollections of what he said?
I don't, honestly. I mean, I don't even know if he said much, to be honest. I think it was one of those things that everyone kind of knew. I mean, it just was what it was at that point. So I think it was just sadness, to be honest. I mean, I think, a lot of tears in that locker room and just more kind of somber mood. And I think there really wasn't much to say at that point. I think he kind of recognized that as well of just, yeah, it is what it is. And I mean, we months down the road, we addressed it after we took some time. And those of us that were coming back, obviously we did a bunch of things and to make some changes to make sure that never happened again. But, definitely in that moment, there was no real words besides just, consoling.
Yeah. Well, you went on to play your final 2 years for the Panthers, but neither of those squads was able to recapture that kind of magic. They both finished at about 500 for the season. You ended up playing 109 games in your career with 8 starts. One of the games that you played in that didn't count because it was an exhibition came in the 2015-16 season where you scored 10 points on 5 of 6 shooting and a win over Truman State. So that gave you an opportunity to play against your former Ankeny teammates, Cole and Corey Myers. Was that fun for you to play against those guys?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I definitely texted them leading up to it once I saw that we were going to play an exhibition or play a game there. Just a lot of fun to play those guys again. And, I mean, played so often together that was good to kind of rekindle that a little bit and, tell the guys on our team how to stop them was, fun as well. So always a great time playing against those guys.
And you told me a while back at the reception for former ranking assistant coach Dave Kissinger that you've played in some men's leagues over the last few years with the Myers Twins, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. So we still play in a men's league out in West Des Moines. Gordon Cole still play on that team. Brian Sumner plays on that team. We used to have Connor Schabel on that team as well. We still get together and play all the time. And it's been a blast being able to kind of rekindle that, kind of get the magic that we've, felt in high school of, just the unselfishness and passing and all that kind of stuff, which has been great.
Yeah, I imagine you guys don't lose very often, do you?
No, we haven't, but we're starting to slow down. I mean, now a lot of us have kids. I think a lot of us are starting to have two kids now. And so I feel like that takes all the time. A lot of those guys now in those men's league might play 3 or 4 times a week. And we've been joking, we play literally 10 games a year, and that's the only time we touch a basketball. So those teams have been starting to catch up to us. We finally we lost for our first time last year. And I think we have the semis and championship this upcoming Sunday. So we'll see how that goes, but definitely will be tough. There's a lot of great teams. There's a lot of great players in the area too that might not have the prestige as playing college or whatever, but they play a lot and they're really good players. So it's been fun to rekindle that stuff.
Well, back when I was your age, I played in 2 or 3 leagues at one time as well, and I still played up until a few years ago. We had a team in the Yankee League here, but then when COVID hit, we shut it down, and we just decided, you know what, it's a good time to quit. So,
yep.
So I'm done at this point, but it was a good run. Yeah, I'd encourage you to play as long as you can because you will miss it when you stop playing.
Absolutely.
Well, the world of college basketball, has changed substantially since you played. Now that we have, the transfer portal and NIL money, did you ever imagine that we would live in a world where college athletes could be paid?
Not in this facet. I mean, I was a proponent of we should be able to make some money off of, selling our jerseys, or we want to do a camp and we can charge whatever we want kind of thing. And I think that's where, it should have probably gone. But I never imagined that, they just come to college and get, $1 million to play, just as part of the team with no, real deal, and it's just kind of like a NBA type money just passed around. I would never would have imagined that, and never would have thought, and at UNI that I would have got some money as well. It'd been just kind of a crazy thought to me that never even occurred to me, or even thought it was even remotely close to happening. Eventually we'd be able to make some money off of some jersey sales and that kind of stuff. I thought that was probably coming down the line. It seemed like a logical transition, but nothing to this extent at all.
Now, I'm sure you'd be the first person to admit that, you didn't play a lot of minutes in your college career, but you were certainly a role player who understood your role on the team. Now, in today's world, a lot of players in that situation might be looking to leave for a different program. And even though you could have done that back in the day, it just wasn't as common, back right then. Did you ever give any thought to transferring, though?
It definitely occurred in my mind. I think especially kind of the roller coasterness of my career, I definitely thought about maybe, trying my hand somewhere else. But I just liked UNI as a college, and I liked the people around me. And I think, as I got a good, great degrees from there as well. And so I think I love basketball, and it's definitely my whole life. And then I kind of realized that there's, a little bit more to life as well. And so I started to kind of factor in those pieces more so, and I saw how much I was enjoying those. And so I think my whole college experience led me to continue to stay. But I mean, to how things are now, I think there'd definitely be probably greater thought, especially I think that the number of different places that initially gave me some offers, I think it might be interesting, especially after that first year when they asked me to redshirt the second year if there'd be a chance for me to go somewhere. So and again, I think interesting thought process, but nothing I really have given too much thought going forward, just not viable.
Well, one thing that hasn't changed at UNI since you left is the head coach, because Ben Jacobson has been guiding the program since 2006. There's only been 10 head coaches who have been in for current position longer than he has. Now, there were some rumblings a couple of weeks ago that maybe coach was tied to the opening at Kansas State, but then the Wildcats hired another Missouri Valley coach, Casey Alexander of Belmont, so that job is now off the table. Coach is in his mid-50s now, and he's been entrenched in Cedar Falls for so long. I just wanted to get your thoughts on his future. Do you think there's any chance he would leave for another job, or do you think he's going to retire as a Panther?
I, at this point, I think, you know, my opinion on its own is that I think he's probably going to stay for good. I think that his real opportunities were after those two teams of, you know, in 14 and 15. And so after that, I think he got offered like the Texas Tech job or something like that at that time. And I think that was his, his real decision factor of how much he wants to stay, you know, long term at Northern Iowa or and he could go somewhere else. So, I mean, I think with, you know, UNI's kind of given as much as they can for him. And so I think he's enjoyed that as well. And I don't necessarily see at this point, if he didn't take it back then, you know, what would change now going forward. Maybe now those kids are, you know, getting to college age maybe, but other than that, I don't really have any true insight on that from behind.
Sure. Well, Ted, before we take a brief look at this year's term, I wanted to mention that you were an outstanding student at UNI as well. I think you had close to a 4.0 GPA. And then in 2016, you were named the winner of the MVC Elite 18 Award at the conference tournament. You graduated with a triple major in business economics, finance, and psychology. So what is it that you're doing today? You work in finance, is that right?
Yep. I work for the Federal Reserve. I'm a bank regulator. So I go travel to banks, make sure that they're safe and sound, and kind of reviewing the analytics of the banking world. So that's kind of what I'm into.
All right. Well, I want to ask you about your psychology degree only because that's what my son graduated with from ISU, and he hasn't been able to make, you know, much use of that degree in his professional life. Have you been able to rely on some of your background in psychology, you know, with your current job at all?
I think psychology is just a great job or great degree just because it helps you understand how people think. Kind of how I picked my three majors. I wanted econ. I wanted more of a, you know, broad landscape of how the entire economy works. Finance, get into the nitty gritty of all the financial information. And then psychology, you got to know people to be able to work with people. And so I think that's where, that's my psychology degree has really come into a facet, especially, you know, I work with a lot of bankers and just kind of understanding perspectives and how people think and different ways that people can think, I think has been a big help for me. And so I think that's where I really enjoy my psychology degree is not you know, doing, you know, being a therapist or anything like that, just being able to kind of help understand how people think in a way that gives me perspective.
Sure.
That would be everybody's doing. Yeah.
Well, of course, your dad is a well-known banker here in town. I assume that's how you kind of went into that field, huh?
Yeah. We had some family friends that also worked for the Federal Reserve and kind of got in touch with him. And my dad said, you might like this because my dad had a friend that was also a regulator as well. So got in touch with them this first job I took out of college and been there ever since.
All right. Listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Legacy Relative Iowa and Revive Dermatology Clinic and Spa. MJ Properties is also a sponsor of the podcast and is the title sponsor of Ankeny Fanatic as well. And we appreciate their support. All right, Ted. Well, before I let you go, let's discuss this year's NCAA tournament a little bit. You know, it should be a fun one for all of us hoop fans here in Iowa with all three of the local teams in the tournament. Friday is going to be a crazy day with Iowa tipping off at 1:50. And then Iowa plays at 5:50 with UNI set to tip off against St. John's in San Diego at 6:10. Now, it's too bad that the Hawkeyes and Panthers will be playing at about the same time, so I guess I'm going to have to try to find a place where I can watch both of those games at the same time. Now, Ted, I know you told me that because of your young kids, you really haven't had a chance to watch, you know, too many games this year. You know, so will you even bother filling out a bracket?
I will, yeah. I'll fill one out just to... Yeah, I don't have the insight anymore that as I used to. I think I had a son that was just born, you know, in the fall this past year, and just now with two kids, it's just been. I mean, like it seems like it comes home. It's just a tornado of playing and everything, and it feels like we fight one of them till bedtime, till 9, and I get ready for the next day, and that way. So I haven't been able to watch much of anything. It's been nice. I'm actually on my leave for my son right now, and so I've been able to take in a lot of the conference tournament games. So it's been nice to kind of understand and at least have a feel for how the teams are. But yeah, definitely don't have much insight. I did start to fill out a bracket. I'm leaning Arizona as a whole. I like their you know, defense prowess. Kind of I think they have the same vibe we had as Ankeny. Everyone kind of averages about the same amount of points, and I think that's really hard to guard. And so I think that's where I'm starting to lean right now. But yeah, it's really exciting having all three Iowa teams in the area. It's great for the state, great for the sport, and yeah, really excited. I'm excited to watch all of them for sure.
I thought you and I got a tough draw. St. John's is coming off a dominant victory to win the Big East tournament over a number 2 seed in UConn. And Coach Patino's team very easily could have been a 4 seed. The 4 seed in that region is Kansas, which is who the winner will likely play on Sunday. And I honestly think you and I would have a better chance to beat Kansas than St. John's the way that the Red Storm, you know, is playing right now. But you know from your own experience that, you know, that is why they play the games. They don't play them. They don't play them on paper. So from what you do know about this year's UNI squad being such a defensive-minded team, you know, what do you think of this matchup?
Yeah, Yeah, I think it's going to be tough. You know, like I said, UNI is going to be in every game just with how good defensively they are. But I think, you know, the pressure that St. John's can put, and obviously we were aware of a Rick Pitino team when he was at Louisville. So kind of an interesting, you know, roundabout where we play them again in the tournament. But yeah, they're just so physical and tough. And I think, you know, with their momentum right now, it's going to be definitely tough. But I think UNI, like I said, is always going to be in it just given their defense prowess, and they'll give everybody troubles always. And so hopefully, just like they were in the, you know, MVC tournament, they'll shoot really well. And I think with their defense, and if they can shoot well, I think they definitely have a chance to beat as well. But yeah, tough matchup. I think St. John's will be tough.
Well, I'm an Iowa State fan. I've been to seen more of their games this season than the other two, because I've been to quite a few of their games. You know, I'm really excited about their draw that they have and the way that they played last week at the Big 12 tournament. And you mentioned Arizona. Did you happen to see any other game against Arizona?
I did watch. I think I got to watch the first half of that one. Yeah, that was a great game. Actually, I watched the second half. Yeah, because I watched the end. That was a really good game. I mean, I think it came down to, it was just one of the best games there. Just who had the ball last was going to win. One of those things. But yeah, I think Iowa State looks really good as well. And I mean, I think they, you know, their defense prowess as well is going to make them give them a good chance to go really far and can make a lot of shots and kind of have a nice balanced attack too. So a lot of senior guards, and I think will help them going forward. So I think I think they got a pretty good draw as well to have a chance at the Final Four too. So that's good.
We got to see a lot of the so-called experts, you know, are picking them to go to the Final Four. I'm not sure if that's good or bad.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But anyway, I guess we'll see you over the next couple of weeks. But Ted, it's been a pleasure to have you on today. You know, thanks a lot for coming in. If you get a chance to watch the games on Friday, I hope you enjoy them. And, you know, thanks again for your time today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
You bet. You've been listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Legacy Realty of Iowa and Revive Dermatology Clinic and Spa. When you work with Legacy Realty, you're not just getting one of the largest and most trusted real estate agencies in Ankeny, you're partnering with over 75 expert agents who are committed to your success. Whether you're searching for your dream home or selling your property for the best possible price, we offer the right tools, strategies, and support to help get you there. As part of LPT Realty, a national leader in the real estate industry, we combine local expertise with innovative resources to give you an unbeatable advantage. Choose us for unparalleled service, proven results, and a commitment to your success in every transaction. Legacy Realty of Iowa, where your real estate goals become a reality. I want to thank my guest again for coming in today. We talked with former Ankeny and Northern Iowa basketball player Ted Friedman about his experiences of playing in the NCAA tournament. I really appreciate his time today, and I enjoyed going down memory lane with him. And come back next week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast.